Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode of a news roundup, John offers his case for a film most of the world loathes. Amanda shares her teachable moment, and then it's time for another movie battle royale, Oscars edition. What was the greatest Best Picture nominee of the 2010s? You're about to find out. Let's see where this top spins us. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, I'm a fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron, how are you doing today?
Wonderful. I'm excited to see what movie's going to win.
I am too.
Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
Oof. We are back for another, well, it's kind of a regular episode. We haven't done a regular one in a little bit.
We haven't done a movie battle royale in a little bit.
Yeah, I think Scariest is the last one we did back in October.
I thought you had one of those memories where you remembered everything.
I do. But I've been drinking. So let's not judge me.
You know, and he's old.
And I'm old. I'm an old drinker. That's what I got, John. I'm an old drinker, and you just brought that up in front of everyone. So I appreciate that.
I'm pretty sure I just called you out for your memory. You're the one that called yourself out for the drinking. Do you want to stand up in front of the crowd and talk about what you've done drinking?
No, I picked a bad time to stop drinking. I can tell you that.
Aha.
Aha! I did go to a series premiere this weekend.
Yeah, tell me about it. And who talked you into going?
John Davenport. Told me.
And?
Oh, Amanda, you did too. But he yelled at me a lot privately.
I was going to say, I contributed.
Yeah, you both did. You both did. There was a series premiere for a show called Conrad that they're trying to get picked up for series. They filmed the pilot. And Troy Heinrichs, my co-host from the Blacklist Exposed, and I were invited to go to that. And so we went to that, and we actually hung out with Eric Roberts.
Really, really cool.
That was very
cool. That sounds classy.
Not only did we interview him, which hopefully we'll hear some of that in an upcoming episode, as well as Harry Lennox and Hisham Tawfiq and Jennifer Karam, the star of the show, but also I got to hang out with him at the VIP room, and he is a cool dude. Just an all-around cool dude. He's had quite the life experience.
I can only imagine. I still remember him from the late 80s, early 90s of like how often they wanted to pull his shirt off and put him in combat movies.
And he now he's villains and everything. And he loves playing a villain. He loves it. So it was pretty cool to talk to him. Most of that, I can't talk about any of that. That was a private conversation. But the interview, I think you guys are going to like. There's a lot of cool stuff in that as well.
Very cool.
You ready to get into the news roundup, which everybody made me keep?
I was born ready for this.
All right. Here's all the news happenings from the past week. Walton Goggins and Mel Gibson are teaming up in Fat Man. It's about a hitman hired by a 12-year-old to take out Santa Claus. Wish I would have thought of that when I was 12. That's an awesome plot. Toni Collette is signing on again with Netflix for Pieces of Her. It's a series about a random act of violence, which sets off a chain of events for Andy and his mom. She's playing the mom, not Andy. Chris Pratt is teaming up with Antoine Fuqua for a TV series that follows a Navy SEAL whose team's ambushed, and he's working to uncover what happened. Kind of surprised Chris Pratt's going to TV. Robert Kirkman, the creator of The Walking Dead, teased on Twitter that a space spore is what caused The Walking Dead outbreak, and nobody knows if he's serious or not. Ray Donovan, the Showtime staple that's been on for 7 years, will not return for season 8. It has not been renewed. It's been canceled. Sorry, guys. Hamilton is finally coming to theaters as the actual stage production on October 15th, 2021. The only way you're going to get me to go see it because I refuse to pay $100 to see anything on a stage. The Lost Boys is getting another reboot on the CW. Sure, why not? Adam Sandler made good on his promise that if he wasn't nominated for an Oscar, he was going to make a really bad movie. He re-upped with Netflix for 4 more movies. Suck it! The Crown is coming to an end with season 5 on Netflix. MoviePass is shutting down permanently. I know. We all thought they already were. They were still around. I don't know how it happened, but they were still around.
Groundhog Day?
I think so. They just keep coming back. And there's a Green Hornet revamp in the works. Oh, yeah. Of all the customers eligible to take advantage of Apple TV Plus for free for a whole year, only 10% actually have.
Suck it!
What? All right. Of all of that news, Amanda, what really stood out to you?
I am excited for Toni Collette to do this Pieces of Her Netflix series. I love Toni Collette doing Toni Collette anything.
I thought it was pretty interesting, but my brain went in a weird way because it went to this dark nightmare world of Toy Story.
Yeah.
Because like Toni Collette is, you know, you have her and Andy, and I'm like, wait a minute. Andy, is this really a Toy Story thing? I don't know. I don't know why my brain did that, but it just sounded like it was a good idea at the time.
That also sounds kind of amazing.
I would watch that.
Pieces of her with the Toy Story side shoot comedy. No.
And I want her to play her mom and Andy because Toni Collette can do it. I want her to be both. It's like that Tara show she did. It's just multiple, you know, she's just playing both parts.
Oh, she was so good at playing all of those different characters and playing a fractured human. I loved it.
Yeah.
This whole thing with like the spore on Walking Dead, and why do people care?
Because he said he would, Robert Kirkman said he would never say what caused the outbreak. Although he said it might be funny to one day just answer it randomly and not tell anybody that I was answering it, which is why people latched on to when somebody asked him about it on Twitter. He said, it was a space spore because he's done with the series now. So they care because they're fans. That's why.
Right. But this seems like one of those things where some guy who's a douchebag decides he's going to mess with people because he knows he can. And he's just going to throw something out there, even though he doesn't even know what the real answer is because he just doesn't care.
Are you calling Robert Kirkman a douchebag?
Kind of.
He kind of is.
I think he did. Yeah, I felt. Did you hear that, Kirkman?
I'm leaning into it. Yeah, he's a douchebag.
That's what I'm saying. He is a douchebag. To take that moment and just try to stab fans with that, I don't understand what the purpose or reasoning behind it is. Is it necessary? No.
Trolling people, and he wants to just troll people. That's
maybe,
what he's like.
Maybe he means it. What if he means it? What if he's like, that's really what it was? It was space
porn. Then he's also an a-hole.
Why?
What, because we're all having this conversation a-hole? Like, wait, what is he right? Is he telling us a real thing? What's going on? Da-da-da-da. He knows what he's doing.
It's funny.
It is funny, but it also makes him a troll and a douchebag and all these other things. So, like, and I don't really even care because I don't watch the show, but I'm looking at everyone's reactions or this whole noise it's making on the internet, and I'm going, guys, the world is on fire. Go find something else to care about.
The world is on fire?
Australia?
Like Australia on fire.
Did the Space Force cause that?
No, but Space Force might.
Jeez.
I don't even
timely
know.
And funny.
I don't even know what that meant, but I like it. Because somehow in my head, I'm like, I can make that work. Yeah, I could see it. I could see Space Force doing that. Sure.
It works just as well as Robert Kirkman going, maybe it was a space bore.
I mean, it makes about as much sense as the new Fast and Furious trailer. Let's be
honest. Oh my God. Oh,
okay. You know what? Hang on. We'll come back to that. We will come back. I promise.
There's a fork in here and we're putting it right here.
It's not in the form. We have to come back to it, but we will give a fair warning because some people don't watch those and I don't want to ruin anything for anybody.
Yeah.
Walton Goggins and Mel Gibson in Fat Man sounds like the best plot pitch I've heard in forever. A kid hires a hitman to take out Santa. I don't know why I'm the only one excited about this, but apparently I am the only one that's excited about it.
I think this is like your new Christmas movie.
Dude, Walton Goggins is a hitman. Boyd Crowder is a hitman hired by a kid to take out Mel Gibson, who's Santa Claus. I don't know how this isn't everyone's movie. This should be everyone's holiday favorite. And it's not even made yet. It just should be. It just sounds amazing.
How would you make this better, Aaron?
There's nothing that makes it better.
I can think of one way.
If he takes out Kurt Russell and then he's got an eye patch and then he just shoots him in the middle of the North Pole.
There you go.
Oh my God.
I was going to say, how is this going to compare
Escape
to
Escape from North Pole?
The Kurt Russell.
There you go.
I just forgot how to make this better. This is going to be.
Wait a minute. I kind of led you there. So technically, I figured out how to make it better.
Yeah, but I get story by credit because I said it out loud. That's how it works. Brilliant. Uh-huh. Brilliant. But thanks for leading me there. Thanks. We'll share the story credit. Christmas right, Chronicles 2, Escape from North Pole.
There you go.
I'm in. Oh my God, that could be amazing. And Tarantino could write like a scene. I'm sorry, I went off a tangent. I got really excited, and I'm having fantasies, and not of J-Lo or Shakira. It's of Kurt Russell and Walton Goggins in the same movie again.
Oh, you know, speaking of J-Lo and Shakira, how many people are disappointed in the fact that you probably looked at that whole routine on screen and you said, this is a beautiful and awesome and such a well-done and tasteful routine, but you know there's going to be people who's going to be writing think pieces on Monday about how little kids should not have been watching that.
The same people who were excited for last year when Adam Levine took his shirt off, or the same people who don't mind cheerleaders or anything like that, because... society.
That's my biggest one right there, Amanda. I've seen, because the Super Bowl, I mean, we're already a couple days past it, so it's kind of old news now, but people that were complaining about this show, I just, hey, more power to you. You didn't like it, you didn't like it. If you didn't like it for artistic reasons, I'm fine with it. But if it's because they're scantily clad, I don't know what game you've been watching your whole life.
Right.
Because Amanda mentioned cheerleaders. They weren't dressed any less revealing than cheerleaders every Sunday. If anything, they were honoring the tradition of the NFL with their outfits. So I just will never, I don't understand it.
I also have to point out that even though I knew that there were going to be those think pieces that popped up, every woman in the house that I was watching the game in was howling about how amazing they were.
Same here. All the guys were too. And not just because, damn. I mean, yeah, that was part of it because they're gorgeous. Both of them are gorgeous women. And J-Lo was 50? Really? I got to take better care of myself.
Shakira's not far behind her. She's 43.
Yeah.
43.
I'm telling you, Latin don't crack them. They look great. They're gorgeous. And they did a fantastic show. Like, that was the most excited I've been. And I don't mean that in a shady way. I mean, legitimately, that's the most enjoyable halftime show I've seen in years. Probably since Prince. That's probably the most fun I've had watching a halftime show since Prince.
And culturally respectful and significant, too.
Yeah, I guess. But I was like, I mean, I'll ask my wife on that one. I don't know. But,
well, I mean, to their roots, like Shakira's was to go back to her Lebanese roots, and there's like Puerto Rican significance in there. There was a lot of things that went back to their cultural roots. And I think that that's something that should be appreciated and respected rather than tearing it down. There was people who were upset that they sung in Spanish as well, and I just don't get it.
What?
Well, Shakira is Colombian and Lebanese, and like, I don't know how you get mad at that.
Yeah, people are weird. I'll tell you what, I mean, this is one of those things where I've heard people say that people were mad. I've seen far more people praise it than rage against it, so I really am not putting much stock in that nonsense. I just think people just got to have something to be mad about sometimes, that's all. But what I would like to say that we need to talk about. Some of you might want to fast forward about 3 minutes, I'm guessing.
I'm going to say 5 because we might be here for a minute.
Okay. So if you haven't seen the new Fast and Furious trailer and you don't want to be spoiled, because we have to spoil it to make fun of it. I mean, discuss it.
I've heard it both ways.
Yeah. You're going to have to skip ahead. So we gave you fair warning because we got a lot of grief for the awards because there's a couple spoilers in there. So I'm just of Game of Thrones. I'm sorry. If you haven't watched it, I don't know whose fault that is, but it's not mine. Fast and Furious. If you don't want to know anything about the new trailer, skip ahead 5 minutes. Ready? Done. Okay. We've all seen it, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. First things first, what do you think about the brother? About John Cena being Dom's brother? And I want to point out, this is important. 8 movies, never has a brother been mentioned. In a series devoted to, what's that word? Anyone help me out?
Family.
A series devoted to family. Nobody mentions his brother. Hey, he's an outcast, whatever. He also happens to be Jason Statham level of super spy. And that's the first one. What do you guys think about that turn of events first?
What the F is going on here? It was totally a setup because they wanted to bring on somebody that has the same size and stature as The Rock, but they can't bring The Rock on the same movie as Vin Diesel because the two of them can't play nice anymore. So let's get John Cena, who you can barely see because that's his whole thing, but he's huge. And I don't know. I don't understand how this story works out. What are they going to do? We're brothers, but his mom and my dad never really actually got together, and she ran away to Washington so he can become super spy.
I just don't understand why he couldn't just be a bad guy. Why does he have to be his brother?
Family.
I'm gonna put it out this way. Maybe it's Dom's way of reeling Charlize Theron's character back in. Just throwing that out there.
It sure didn't appear that way.
Well, it's not supposed to, but I bet you by the end of the movie, it's going to turn out that Dom had it all set up to begin with to reel Charlize Theron's character back in so he can get his revenge on Charlize Theron's character and capture her or do whatever it takes to be whatever beating her is.
And apparently, by the end of the movie, I'm sure they'll be on good terms again because everybody's forgiven in this franchise except Charlize Theron.
Exactly.
What
speaking of forgiven.
Hang on.
We have to get to the important thing.
No, this is very important. 8 movies. They never mention this dude in the preview. All your life, you've been wanting to be Dom and be like Dom and live up to Dom. I'm like, bitch, nobody knew he was brothers with Dom. How do you know this? I don't understand. This is a plot point.
This reminds me of Velocipaster, which, Aaron, you haven't seen it yet. But basically, as Velocipaster carries on, you're thinking one thing the entire time, and then out of nowhere, in the last 15 minutes of the movie, they add a character in every scene that you've already been to just to make this story make sense. And it is ridiculous. It's funny in Velocipaster, but that's what this reminds me of.
That's classic.
I feel like they could have just taken this into space and it would be more believable.
Here's what I think, and this is legitimate. I really, truly believe this. All these years, I've been saying, man, I can't wait. They got to go into space. They got to ride dinosaurs to space. I don't care. They're going to end up in space. And now I think they might actually do it, and it scares the shit out of me. I really... I'm really afraid it's going to happen. Just terrified. All right, the bigger reveal, because we gotta move on. We got a lot of stuff
yes.
to do. Han is alive. Each of you,
what?
Your thoughts.
The guy who died and has been revealed as dead in 2 different movies?
They had a funeral! Nobody looked in the casket, I guess. I don't know.
This is their way of like saying, you know how everyone hates Jason Statham's character for killing Han?
Yep.
Psych!
Yep. Man.
Let's retcon 3 movies now.
and 2 of them specifically have plot points built upon and that cause wanton destruction and probably mass casualties, much like the Avengers when they lifted that city and dropped it. So I guess we're going to Civil War next. I guess that's what we're building up to. And this is not a thing that he's his death impacted those movies, and apparently now it's moot. And I want to point out, I went back and rewatched it. When his car flips and it blows up, the car blows up. So he would have to be horribly scarred, number one. The next movie, they have a massive funeral that's planned, which is apparently going to be pointless at this point. I don't understand the Han coming back thing. Like, I get you want to do something cool for fans. Don't make it to where, you know, where you're not only jumping the shark, you're jumping the ocean. You're just like launching over. I mean, it's just, it's in a series that is built on ridiculous. That's too far. Twins are next, I swear to God.
Maybe Han is a twin. Maybe this alive Han is his twin that we never knew about because everybody has a brother and everybody's family.
Okay, I could go with that. That I could work with. I really could. But the director said bringing Han back, he didn't take lightly. So I think it is Han.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that's Han, especially with the whole tick of Han eating as he's walking in a room. That was his thing.
That better mean Gal Gadot can come back. Because she didn't really die. She just fell off an airplane.
Right.
That means nothing in Fast and the Furious world.
No, I mean, pair up with DC. She was hiding. She was actually Wonder Woman the whole time. She was in hiding. She couldn't show her identity. Now you can see it. I'm actually Wonder Woman. No?
If she came into it as Wonder Woman, that would be kind of cool.
At this point, it works. At this point.
More than Han.
At this point, if they literally rode dinosaurs into space, I would not be surprised. They have done everything. They've got a car that they... what did he do? He just drove off a cliff and apparently angled the car perfect to catch the rope bridge and then
right.
swing over?
The
what?
Anchor hook happened to get it at the exact right moment in the exact same spot because there's no wind. There's no such thing as like gravity impact or anything like that. The science just makes sense, Aaron.
Okay.
You know what I want to see? I want to see the morons who think this stuff is real and actually try to pull that off. That's what I want to watch. I want to watch those Darwin Award winning morons sit there and be like, watch, I'm going to do what they did in Fast and the Furious. Why am I dead?
You should have hit it right at... Man, you hit the wrong tire, Jeff. Sorry. Guys!
Those movies lied to me.
All right. Anything else? You guys want to say anything else about the whole Fast and Furious deal?
I'm still going to watch it.
We're all going to still watch it.
Watch the hell out of it. Yeah. Probably three times. All right. Make the case, John. You get to this week take our side topic and take a movie that is universally loathed, but you love it. And tell us why you love it. Why does it work for you? Make
so
the case.
So sitting at a 21% on Rotten Tomatoes, I'm bringing in Basic.
The John Travolta, Samuel L. Jackson military thriller?
Yep. Tom Hardy, an ex-Army Ranger turned DAA agent, is drawn into an ever-widening mystery surrounding the disappearance of a feared and hated Sergeant Nathan West, as well as several other elite Special Forces trainees. This movie is fascinating to me. I have to say, it takes place in Panama, so there might be some nostalgia reasons as to why I love it so much. It takes place in Panama during a hurricane on Clayton Air Force Base, even though they're Army. That was interesting to me. But you got these guys who go out into the middle of the forest and they end up shooting at each other and killing this guy that's played by Samuel L. Jackson. And they come back and it's this. The whole idea is they have to sit there and try to piece together this story. And honestly, when I just recently we rewatched it, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, they're really stretching to try to make this story different because these guys are essentially lying at every single chance they get just to keep hiding and just to keep revealing more special little tricks of what's going on here. But for whatever reason, I buy into it every single time. I sit there and I think Travolta's great at it. Connie Nielsen's fantastic. Samuel L. Jackson's awesome. Tim Daly is a great villain in this. Tay Diggs, Giovanni Ribisi, who I hate and everything, is actually kind of fun to watch in this. Like, I don't know what it is about this movie, but it is just a wonderful little thing. And every time I feel homesick or I want to feel close to my family, I'll put this movie on and I'll watch it again.
Was it shot on location?
I don't believe it actually was.
Huh. I remember watching that movie when it first came out. I didn't like it the first time it came out. And I went and saw it because I was a huge General's Daughter fan. And it reminded me a lot of that movie. And I didn't like it the first time I saw it. But I came back to it like 6 months later and I really enjoyed it. So I don't know why I didn't like it the first time. Maybe that's what happened with some critics. But I remember liking it a lot more the second time. I still don't like it as much as General's Daughter. I love that movie. I don't know if you've seen that one or not.
No, I have seen that one. That one is a great movie. Yeah. This one relies so much more on this idea of trying to piece this story together and being able to watch how these lies unfold into truths, unfold into this, unfold into that. And then the big twist at the end, I thought was just enjoyable.
And Amanda, have you seen this one? I don't want to step on your toes.
I have not.
Okay. There's a lot of the movie that is centered around interrogation and trying to uncover, because basically John Travolta is a military investigator, if I remember
he,
right.
He was a military investigator when he was in the Army.
Right. So Connie Nielsen brings him in to help try to piece this all together. And this is just like at the height of John Travolta's resurgence after Pulp Fiction. And, you know, Samuel L. Jackson's in this too. He never really loses his cool.
Right.
It's just, yeah, man, I agree with you. I think this is one where they got it wrong. This is not a bad movie. I don't think it's great, but it's not a bad movie at all.
No, it definitely doesn't deserve a 21%, but that's just me.
Critics, man, they don't like
joy. Yeah, with
joy.
A stacked cast like that, I find it hard to believe that it's that terrible of a movie.
I mean, did you see Battlefield Earth? Because it can happen.
As a matter of fact, I think it happened just before this.
Before or after one of them, but...
I think it's before this because I know where I was for Battlefield Earth.
Well, lessons were learned.
Hopefully, leaving the theater once it started. That's where I would have liked to have been when that came out. Well, good one. Good pick. Our show is independently funded, so therefore, all of the expenses are from our own pockets, and Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. Once you sign up for patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider, you get immediate access to all the content in your respective tier. We just had a bonus episode where we each interviewed ourselves. And there's actually a way, if you listen to that, you can send in a question of your own for the next episode, next bonus episode we do. We also do Bad Movie Night, where we take movies like this that people don't like for some reason, and we talk about it. And our next one, we did Bad Boys last month. We're going to do Heartbreakers for February, which it gets very uncomfortable in the first 10 minutes, but then finally the episode gets better. So I think you'll like that. But Tori Melchin, thank you for signing up for Patreon. And Grillbox, thank you for upping your tier. Thank you both so much for supporting the show. And now that you understand what it is, if you want to support The Hollywood Outsider, patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. New releases coming out February 7th, Birds of Prey is finally here. And after splitting with the Joker, Harley Quinn joins superheroes Black Canary, Huntress, and Renee Montoya to save a young girl from an evil crime lord. Also, The Lodge. We haven't had a good horror movie in a while. We've had a lot of bad horror movies lately. A soon-to-be stepmom is snowed in with her fiancé's two children at a remote holiday village. Just as relations begin to thaw between the trio, I see what they did there, some strange and frightening events take place. I've heard good things about actually both movies.
Following that, we have also on February 7th, the series premiere of Lock and Key. Three siblings move into their ancestral estate after the father's murder discovered the new home's magical keys, which must be used to stand against an evil creature that wants the keys and their powers. This stars a whole lot of people who you don't know, I don't know, and it has no interest in. I have no interest in trying to say these names.
Fair enough.
Also on February 7th on VOD, A Patient Man. In the aftermath of a terrible car accident, a man tries to make sense of his life and seeks revenge for what he has lost. And then on February 12th, if you want to get a little bit of love in your life for Valentine's Day on Netflix, To All the Boys, P.S. I Still Love You. Lara Jean and Peter have just taken their relationship from pretend to officially official when another recipient of one of her old love letters enters the picture. So it's a nice little triangle, rectangle, who knows what it'll be.
So of those, what are your picks of the week? Your pick of the week, just one pick. Well, what am I doing? You don't get multiple options.
I'm going to go with Birds of Prey. That's what I'm excited about the most.
I have seen some really great reviews on that movie, so I am with you.
Yeah, I always get nervous when you get those early reactions because they're just happy they saw it before you. So I'll wait with bated breath, but I'm really pumped for Birds of Prey. We're going to talk about it next week. I can't wait. I'm hoping we get positive vibes from it.
Fingers crossed.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the Hollywood Outsider Movie Battle Royale. That is where we take 8 films, 2 favorites from each of our hosts, and we determine which one is the ultimate greatest film in the entire Ho universe. It is definitely a lot of fun, and it is time to get to it. Let's decide what is the greatest film of its genre. It's time for the Movie Battle Royale. All right, well, it's time for our From the Outside In topic, and this is a Oscar Movie Battle Royale 2010s edition. Joining us is Courtney Davenport, no relation.
Hi, everybody.
Hello. And you've been on Remake This Movie Right several times. You've been on a lot of stuff. You've been on this show before, too.
Yes, I enjoy it very much. I am a professional, and I have been training all week for this battle royale. This is a physical fight, right?
Yes, you and Amanda to the death.
Yes.
Can we hug after?
No.
Aww.
Not at all.
No, we don't do that. We don't do that. Okay, so here's how this is going to work. This is from 2010 to 2019, any Best Picture nominee from the 2010s counted. So for this episode, we put up a poll in our Facebook group of every Best Picture nominee from the 2010s. That's 2010 through 2019, like I said. And each picked at least one of our listener top 10, plus one more to total 8 finalists. And now we will each pitch our 2 films and vote until we have elected the greatest Oscar Picture nominee of that decade. All ties will be settled by that listener poll. Everybody ready?
Ready, Freddie.
Ready.
That was delayed. Are you sure?
Yes, I am. Okay. I was stretching.
Okay, that's good. All right, we break this up into Ho North and Ho South. Amanda, start us off with Ho North.
All right. So for Hoenor.
Wow.
Hoenor.
Out the gate.
All right. This first one. Parasite.
그런데요.
아, 그 제 시크한 친구가 엄청 독특한 수업을 하면서 애들을 꽉 잡는다고 소문이 쫙 났답니다. 뭐 이쪽 어깨선 나름 신선한 케이스. 근데 또 그 친구 수업이 유니크하면서도 뭐 예중, 예고, 입시까지 뭐 다 커버해주는.
어머, 어머, 너무 궁금하네요. 어떤 분이실까?
만나보시겠어요? 아, 근데 이 친구 약속 잡기 되게 어렵다던데.
Greed and class discrimination threaten the newly formed symbiotic relationship between the wealthy Park family and the destitute Kim clan. And I chose this film, even though it is very, very recent. And I love so much about it. It was my favorite movie of 2019. I love the social commentary on the wealth inequality because I feel like it affects most of the world. And it talks about how poverty can create even the most unusual circumstances in times of desperation. The way the narrative is weaved with the different shots that are used and the dialogue to me is impeccable. It's something that's relatable to so many individuals, and that's why the language barrier is not really much of an issue for the film at this point, unless you're like one of 17 Academy Award voters. And it's also one of the first of its kind.
Wait, what? What was that about?
Oh, I'll come back to that in a second. It's one of the first, at least that I know of, to kind of really break the barrier of language down in terms of the Academy Awards. And because of that, I think that really speaks to the value of the film, the quality of it. The incredible performances from Kang Ho Song and So Dam Park as complete standouts, but really the entire cast delivered on every level. I love this film so much.
Now go back to the 17 people, because now I want to know what the hell I missed. What's going on?
So I've been following the news and individuals around the Oscars who are really involved in it. And this is just based on their information, who've spoken with, at least by their numbers, 17 Academy Award voters. And those individuals said that they have not even watched Parasite because that's too much work to read the dialogue, the subtitles.
Well, that's just sad.
It's sad and disappointing, but at least, I mean, there are so many people that I don't think would have ever watched a movie in that would require them to read subtitles and did so for this film and loved it.
You could probably do a whole outside in topic on foreign movies that you really just need to suck it up and watch, because I know reading is hard, but it is also fundamental. And that they should be watched. But yeah, that's a shame if that's the case. Because it was a very good movie. We watched it recently.
Wait, John watched it?
Yes. Was I not supposed to reveal?
Well, she hasn't even gotten to her second movie yet. So we're jumping the gun
okay.
a little bit.
All right.
Sorry, well, I thought we were discussing.
No, you could. Man, maybe buzzkill. All right, go ahead, Amanda. Sorry.
I'm sorry. Speaking of buzzkill, Amanda, let's go with your second movie. So then we can get into a discussion afterwards.
Oh, sorry. Okay, second movie. Hacksaw Ridge.
Then I shall henceforth call you Chief, as a sign of great respect to your people.
Thank you, Sergeant!
Are you grinning at me, boy, or is that your natural state?
No, Sergeant.
Name, Private.
Desmond Dawes.
I have seen stalks of corn with better physiques. Makes me want to pull an ear off, Private. Can you carry your weight?
Yes, Sergeant.
Should be easy for you, then. Corporal.
Sergeant.
Make sure you keep this man away from strong winds.
Yes, Sergeant.
World War II American Army medic Desmond Doss, who served during the Battle of Okinawa. Oh, I'm sorry.
Talk about reading hard words.
I know. I'm so bad. Refuses to kill people and becomes the first man in American history to receive the Medal of Honor without firing a single shot. I think that story itself is amazing, and the fact that it actually happened. Andrew Garfield put on a completely raw and believable performance that shines. I mean, it was immaculate. The whole movie, it was an actual experience. The set pieces, absolutely magnificent. The screenplay behind it is compelling. Somehow, as much as I feel like it's unbelievable, I realize that this actually happened. And it's so emotionally charged. There's so many times where I was brought to tears because of the impact of the film. And I feel like all of the different elements, the way that the set design was, the performances, the screenplay, the actual effects, I mean, all of it was beautiful. So that is my two picks, Parasite and Hacksaw Ridge. So between those, if we would have discussion, I will go with Courtney.
Oh, hello. So as I was saying before, yeah, we watched Parasite pretty recently. It was on my list to watch because Amanda recommended it in a recent Ho episode. I believe it was your favorite of the year or of the decade even.
No, just so the, I think knew, just the year.
Oh, so I knew it was legit and I really needed to check it out. And we did. And I agree with everything you say. I think it was a really good study on the difference between the classes. I found myself rooting for different families at different times. Mm-hmm. And I really like it when a movie does that to me because I'm rooting for the family that's taking advantage of the really nice family. Well, in the beginning, they seemed really nice until the conversation on the couch when he talks about the smell. But and then you're like, you're kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
But I like it when a movie does that to me and gets me to switch sides. And I thought the ending was unexpected and shocking. And so I enjoyed that one very much. Hacksaw Ridge, I must admit, I fell asleep during. So that one didn't really speak to me as much as it did to you. I think it was a really good story and I appreciate it, especially if it is based on a true story. But I think my choice would definitely be Parasite.
Awesome. Aaron, what about you?
Ooh, I get to go. So I like Parasite. I thought it was a very good movie. I wouldn't put it in top of the decade. I just, the ending kind of went a little too out there for me. I just thought, okay, well, you had me. And now you just, the Morse code thing was like, what? I didn't spoil anything. I just said the Morse code thing. I didn't see what that meant. It's a very good movie. It's not one of the best of the decade. Hacksaw Ridge is a movie that, and I lean more toward military service. I was in the military. My grandfather was in the military. I have a lot of respect for servicemen. That's a beautiful story. And it's about a guy who refused to fight. And that is something that I'm not saying more servicemen should do, but I respect his decision to do it. You can be honorable without picking up a gun. You can serve your nation, you can serve your country, you can do your duty without picking up a gun. And I thought that was a beautiful story. It was told wonderfully. And Andrew Garfield was just stunning in that movie. Vince Vaughn was great in that movie as well. It's a film I love. I think I had it in my top two the year it came out. It's definitely, to me, one of the best of the decade. So I would take Hacksaw Ridge.
Wow. Okay. Johnny, you get to decide.
You know, when I was looking at these two movies, I thought I knew which way I was going to go because up until today, I hadn't even seen Hacksaw Ridge, but I made sure I gave myself some time to put an eye on it. And it really adjusted my thinking because Parasite, beautifully shot, wonderful story about people who inevitably are a-holes. And I don't really react well to a-holes, you know. Sure, the Park family, which is the family that has money, sure, they're not necessarily angels either, but at least they aren't trying to take advantage of anyone. They just don't like the way people smell, and they do think they're a little bit better than other people for stupid reasons. But you got the other family who, the Kims, are they're just a-holes, and they ended up doing monstrous things, quite by accident, but still kind of bad, and it just doesn't speak to me. Hacksaw Ridge, on the other hand, if for any other reason besides what Aaron said of the, you know, conscientious cooperator, as he called himself in the movie, you have a full 45 minutes of that movie, which is everyone who's supposed to have either an English or an Australian accent doing West Virginian. And it was true. Kind of amazing.
That's true.
And then they sneak in the milk toast that is known as Sam Worthington. And you don't realize he's actually acting for probably the only time you've ever seen him in his career actually acting, because I can't think of, besides being his face being turned into a blue cat, I don't think I've ever seen him actually act.
Well, he's always like, where's the green screen? I'm not used to people. What are people doing here? It's so weird.
This is so weird. So I'm going to have to go with Hacksaw Ridge primarily because I got to see Sam Worthington act. good for him.
That's still, I mean, both of them were great choices, not to pat myself on the back, but Hacksaw Ridge goes on.
My first pick won the Best Picture Oscar, and that's 12 Years a Slave.
Mr. Boggle.
Say again?
Mr. Boggle.
The man received a letter compiling many accusations. You look me in the eye. And on your life, you answer me truthfully. Have you any other name than Platt?
Solomon Northup is my name.
Sheriff, what's all this?
It's official business.
My nigga, my business.
Your business waits. Tell me of your family.
Platt.
I have a wife, two children.
What the hell?
What were your children's names?
Margaret and Alonzo.
What was your wife's name before her marriage?
Ann Hampton, I am who I say.
Now, 12 Years a Slave tells the true story of Solomon Northup. He was a free black man from upstate New York who was kidnapped and then sold into slavery. I do believe, I hear a lot of this, especially when we have a lack of diversity in the nominees. I do believe the black community deserves to see other works in awards talks than just films like this, but I don't think that dilutes the power of this one. In particular, how it does something that no film before it has ever done for me personally. As a white person, slavery is very tough to talk about. It's even harder to fully comprehend, I think. I grew up in a predominantly black neighborhood, and most of my friends were black, and when they explained slavery, it always seemed to me like some weird alternate universe in a way, because how could people act like that? How could people, and my distant relatives, I guess, you know, great-great-great-grandmothers and fathers, how could they own people, and how could they allow that to happen? So I remember watching Roots with my friend Lamont when I was a kid and his family, and they were inconsolable. They felt that story. I think anyone with any kind of heart has always empathized with slavery, but I feel like unless you happen to be directly affected, it's very hard to truly understand the level of pain that causes, even today, the ripple effects. And movies have that power, and I feel like 12 Years a Slave really reaches out to other people that aren't directly affected by slavery and helps them understand a little bit more directly what that feels like. And here's why. What that film does is it puts you in the shoes of a black man by taking what white people have always been, free, and ripping that away. He has a family, he has a job, he has a home, he has a free life. He has the same safety and security we all do. And then one day he is just kidnapped from his free existence and sold into slavery. He's still the same intelligent man that he always has been, but now he has to play this part to survive. To get back to his family, he just makes it. He just tries to find a way to keep going. He's beaten, but he's never broken. He feels like he doesn't belong, even though he's no different than anyone there. I mean, he's just got a different, his journey was different. He empathizes with slaves, but he finds it really difficult to relate to them. And I think that's something that you've never seen on screen before, how free men felt in this environment. Because he doesn't consider himself a slave. You know, he's from a different world in a way. So the film puts everyone in Simon's shoes. It forces everyone to truly comprehend what slavery really is. And we've all known someone who said that they'd never be a slave because they're too smart or they're too tough. I think everyone I know at some point in my life has said something to that effect. And I think this film really puts that nonsense to bed. If this happened to you, if you were in Solomon's shoes, you would be just like Solomon. Or you would die. It's that simple. It's a very horrific film. It's one that I think is extremely hard to watch, but I do believe everyone should watch it. It's the kind of film that explains that these things still happen today in different forms. Sex trafficking is just as diabolical as slavery in many respects. And occasionally movies have that power to really open your eyes. And I don't feel like anybody's eyes have ever been more open than when you watch 12 Years a Slave. That's the first one. Now, my second film is Silver Linings Playbook.
Slow down, Raisin Bran.
Hey, come on. Look, I don't think you're crazy, all right?
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
You told your therapist that you were in a superior mental illness category and he didn't hear.
Hey, calm down. Hey.
Leave me alone.
Can I just explain myself, please? I didn't want Nikki to think that I was associated with that kind of sexual behavior because I've never done anything like that, okay?
You may not have experienced the shit that I did, but you loved hearing about it, didn't you? You are afraid to be alive. You are afraid to live. You're a hypocrite. You're a conformist. You're a liar. I opened up to you, and you judged me. You're an asshole. You're an asshole. Get off me. Get off. You're harassing me. He's harassing me.
And this is not a film about love. A lot of people often refer to it as a romantic drama, and I just don't see it that way. To me, it is about accepting mental illness. After a stint in a mental institution, Bradley Cooper's Pat moves back in with his parents and tries to put his life back together. Pat has been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, but like many people suffering, he doesn't like how the medication makes him feel, so he stops taking it. And then his mood issues accelerate. And also kind of brings Jennifer Lawrence's Tiffany, a very young woman with mental issues of her own, into the picture. And their connection kind of leads both of them to finally accept who they are, mental illness and all. For me, it was really refreshing. I was raised surrounded by psychology. I've had my own issues, and I'm sure many of you have too. It was really nice to see a film that had people with mental illness or struggles with illness who seemed to understand that mental illness is not so simplified as many movies portray it, and actually show mental illness in all its glory. You know, you can be a good guy and still have outbursts of rage. You can be a good woman and have promiscuity issues because you're trying to prove to the world that you can feel, I guess. I mean, everybody has a different reason for why they do the things they do, and anxiety and depression and all of these factors are important to how that happens. And Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence in this movie are both amazing. So are De Niro and Jackie Weaver. It might be the last time De Niro actually acted and wasn't just there sitting quietly. And it's a film about accepting who you are, even when who you are isn't always so great. More importantly, it's about everyone attempting to understand the genuine truth behind mental illness and how you can live with it or watch it destroy your life. It's a film with intelligence and heart, and it never devolves into tropes or generic conveniences. It's a very moving, scary, beautiful, a little terrifying. Most importantly, I find it to be a very honest movie. So those are my two picks. So I have Silver Linings Playbook and 12 Years a Slave. John.
This is a really tough choice for me because 12 Years a Slave, whenever someone brings it up, I always think in my head, because I did see it and I saw it in the theater, and they think, well, would you ever see it again? And my first thought is, F that movie, because I am not watching that again. However, it is still, to this day, one of the most beautiful pieces of film put to celluloid. It is impactful. It is just moving. It is scary. It really just tears away at anything that pretends to protect you from what might be out there, and just shows it to you in its most ugly nature. And then Silver Linings Playbook, a movie that just kind of okay with. I can just take or leave at this point. So of these two choices, I would have to say 12 Years a Slave.
All right. Courtney?
My thoughts are right along the same line with that. I talked about 12 Years a Slave a couple years ago when we did the All Girls episode of movies that make you cry, tearjerker movies. And I talked about, you know, spoiler alert, if anyone has not seen the movie, there's a final scene in the movie where Solomon has been reunited with his family after 12 years, and his daughter introduces him to her son, whose name is Solomon. Mm. And in that moment, you just see on his face everything he's lost, everything he's missed, the time he won't get back. And it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart to even think about it. And it's not even playing in front of me. There's not a lot of movies that deserve the word important. It's thrown around a lot, but this is one that deserves it. So my vote would definitely be for 12 Years a Slave. Silver Linings Playbook is a good movie. It's a great movie. It's important for the reasons that you said, but 12 Years a Slave is just, it's a mountain next to it. So that's my vote.
Mandy, your vote doesn't mean anything, but you can vote.
I don't even have much to add to what John and Courtney have already said and what you've already said about a movie that, like Courtney had referred to as being important. It is important, and it's something that I don't really know how you get beyond that in terms of the way it was represented, the way it was portrayed, the significance of it. And Aaron, I think you really spoke to the relevance and the impact that it has based on the way that it was framed in terms of taking somebody who's free and connecting that with individuals who would otherwise have no real understanding of how horrible it has been for those individuals who went through slavery and, you know, the ramifications long term, the effects that we've had throughout our society. So 12 Years a Slave simply deserves to go on to, you know, the final stages as one of the most impactful films and best films.
All right, so we've got Hacksaw Ridge, we've got 12 Years a Slave, and now we move to Ho South. We've got John. What are your two?
All right, so my first movie is 2013's American Hustle.
Oh! Ho!
Another fire!
No, Danny, not that one. That one's empty. We gotta use the big one.
I told you not to put metal in the science oven. What'd you do that for?
Don't make such a big deal. Just get another one.
I don't want another one. I want the one that Carmine gave me.
Oh, Carmine. I want the one that Carmine gave me. Carmine.
Why don't you just marry Carmine? Get a little gold microwave and put it on a chain around your neck. You want to be more like Carmine? Why don't you build something like he does? Instead of all your empty deals, it's just like your fucking science oven. You know, I read that it takes all of the nutrition out of our food. It's empty, just like your deals. Empty, empty.
Bullshit.
It's not bullshit. I read it in an article. Look, by Paul Berdour. Bring something into this house that's going to take all the nutrition out of our food and then light our house on fire? Thank God for me.
American Hustle is a black crime comedy directed by David O. Russell, written by Eric Warren Singer. American Hustle was inspired by the FBI's Abscan operation. It's an operation designed in the 1970s and 80s to capture corrupt politicians. It stars Christian Bale doing what he's known for, at least what he used to be known for, which is to put on a whole bunch of weight for no good reason, shave his head in a funny way, and create the monstrous, the absolute monstrous comb over that he had in that movie. And then right standing right next to him, falling in love with him and making all of us fall in love with her, you have Amy Adams, who's just powerfully talented and just amazing. Bradley Cooper steps in and out of this movie and tries to steal every single scene that there's enough room for him in, and he does a deft job at that. Jeremy Renner is stretched in ways that are way out of his comfort zone, and you have Jennifer Lawrence just being both scary and pretty at the same time. Bottom line, this cast is stellar. Deft directing and a sense of style and a humor that is rarely matched. It makes the movie worthy of the following. The film received 10 nominations in the 86th Academy Award, including Best Picture, Best Director, Best Original Screenplay, Best Actor for Christian Bale, Best Actress, Amy Adams. I can keep going, but everybody like got a nomination thrown at them. Unfortunately, not a single one of them won, but that's okay because this movie won 3 BAFTA awards, which, for those who don't know, that's basically the British Oscars.
It's not basically. Literally is the British Oscars.
Well, all right. I mean, you can say, I've heard it both ways.
Pinkies up when you say that.
Mm. Pinkies, yeah. 3 Golden Globe Awards, including for Best Motion Picture for Musical and Comedy, and the Screen Actor Guild's Award for just a cast. Because, of course, it did, which... With all those accolades and everything going for it, it didn't win an award, but it might as well have, because it's just so much fun, it's so amazing, and it's hard to miss exactly why, because when you watch it. My second movie, I present to thee, 2015's Mad Max Fury Road.
I never thought I'd do something as shiny as that.
How are the engines?
Very hot and real thirsty.
Hey, you need to take the war rig half a click down the track.
What if you're not back by the time the engines are cool enough?
Why you keep moving?
What do you suppose he's gonna do?
Retaliate first. Let's go!
Co-written, produced, and directed by George Miller, Miller collaborated with Brendan McCarthy and Nico Lothorius on the screenplay. This is the fourth installment and the revisiting of the Mad Max films, a joint Australian-American venture. This film is set in a post-apocalyptic desert wasteland where petrol and water are scarce and commodities, and it follows Max Rockestansky, because of course his name has to have rock in it, because it's Tom Hardy playing him and it's Mad Max, who joins forces with Imperator, you know what, forget it, you know who her name is. Her name is Furiosa, and it's Charlize Theron, and they flee from a cult leader named Immortan Joe, because of course his name's Immortan Joe, and his army of armored tanker trucks leading this whole movie on this long road battle that has Nicholas Holt, a whole bunch of pretty girls in a tanker for some reason, and a guy on top of a truck playing a guitar with flames throwing out of it for no good reason. Fury Road was in development hell for many years. Pre-production started in 1997, and they attempted to start filming in 2001, and they tried again in 2003, but you know what? September 11th unfortunately got in the way, and so did the Iraq War. In 2007, after focusing on Happy Feet, Miller decided to pursue this again. Because of course you did, because he tried to do Happy Feet first. He needed a freaking palate cleanser is what I need. This movie earned 10 nominations for Academy Award, for including Best Picture, Best Director, and a whole bunch of other ones in the 88th Academy Awards. It had the most nominations after Revenant, which also had Tom Hardy in it. And it's the first one of the Mad Max franchise to actually get any sort of acknowledgement from the Academy. It won a whole bunch of them, too. Go figure. And of course it did. It had a guy in a red suit on top of a tanker trunk playing a guitar that shot flames out of it. And that's why it's my second movie. I'm going to take this to Amanda.
Oh, this is easy for me. I wasn't really big on American Hustle. So Mad Max.
Really? All right.
Yeah.
You're not going to give me any sort of reasons or anything? Nothing? No, long-winded thingy?
Well, first of all, Mad Max actually won some of their nominations, so that definitely helps. But, well. The movie itself is just visually beautiful. I'm still not 100% sold on it being a great script or screenplay, because I felt like they just went in a giant circle, but it was really cool, and Charlize Theron is amazing, so...
So I had somewhere written down here that the movie's actually called Mad Max, but it really was an excuse to make Charlize a badass the entire time. So it's like a backseat in her movie.
And all right,
Aaron, your turn.
My turn? Oh, well. I'm going to put this in the old science oven and try to decide.
I'm actually so glad you called Aaron next, because I'm legit, I don't know which way to go.
Oh, this is fairly, hey, I love Jennifer Lawrence and I love everybody in that cast, but... There's a dude, there's a freaking guy with a guitar and flames flying out of his car.
Seriously, you guys.
The entire movie. The entire movie. Here's the plot. We're going to go from point A to point B and then go exactly back to point A where we started from. That's the whole plot. And it's viciously entertaining. It is an action movie taken to the nth degree. Now, do I think it's one of the best movies of the decade? Probably not. I know a lot of people do. I'm not one of them. But between this and American Hustle, I will watch Mad Max any day of the week and twice on Sunday. American Hustle is one where I enjoyed it. But when it was over, I'm like, is Mad Max on? I might go check that out just to watch the palette a little bit. So yeah, Mad Max, Fury Road.
All right, Courtney, your vote doesn't matter, but go ahead.
My vote doesn't matter, but that's funny. If you really want to just see a guy with a guitar on top of a vehicle, like, go watch a Whitesnake video or something.
Give me 2 hours of that, and I will. And Tawny Kitaen, too.
So the reason why I liked American Hustle is a lot of what you already described, which is it's a murderer's row of excellent actors in our generation. I kind of feel like there was a recent movie, I can't remember the name of it, Bad Times at El Royale.
Bad Times at the El Royale, the Royale?
Yeah, at the El Royale. That was sort of trying to be similar to American Hustle with the whole, all of these big actors are in it and they're telling this intricate story. I had a really genuinely good time with American Hustle. I thought everybody in it was so good and so compelling and so fun to watch. I actually think I would watch that over Mad Max Fury Road, which was lovely to look at. The action set pieces were stellar Don't get me wrong. But I would vote American Hustle over that.
Well, it's a good thing your vote doesn't matter.
Boop, boop.
I know. But it was a very tough choice, as I said before. It doesn't sound like it. Just edges it out just a tiny bit.
For me. It's important. It's called Mad Max, and John kind of alluded to this, but it's called Mad Max. He's tied up for half the movie. He's not even really the star at all.
And this is the one y'all want to pick? Really?
It's a great movie. It's great.
He had maybe three lines in the whole movie. The rest of the time, it was Furiosa just being a badass.
Yeah.
Well,
that's why people are like, well, you should make a Furiosa movie now. He did. What movie did you see?
What movie did you watch?
Okay.
All right. So looks like Mad Max Fury Road is going off to the next round. It is time for Courtney to take the floor.
Okay. So I've picked two movies, one which it's very likely not a lot of people have seen, and the other one probably everybody has seen. So I'm going to spend this first pick trying to convince people to please go see it. And my first pick is Beasts of the Southern Wild.
I'm going to tell you something. When you're a child, people tell you that life is going to be all happy and honky-dory and all that bullshit, but I'm here to tell you that it's not. So you need to get that out your head right now. Because, yeah, life's some big old feast, but you ain't nothing but a stupid little waitress. One day, everything on your plate going to fall on the floor. And nobody going to be there to pick it up for you. One day, it's going to be all on you. You understand what I'm saying?
So this movie is the story of a 6-year-old girl named Hush Puppy who lives with her dad south of the levees in Louisiana. And during the movie, a hurricane is a-comin'. I cannot honestly remember if it was said that this was Hurricane Katrina. If it wasn't said, it's sort of supposed to be a massive, deadly storm, just like Katrina. But the movies were not really about the storm. There's another phrase that's thrown around a lot, the triumph of the human spirit. And this is really it in a nutshell. And I'm probably not doing a good job of making you want to watch it because you're like, oh, hurricane coming. South of the levees. This is probably a terrible place to live. And it is. But the strength of this movie is Hush Puppy as a character. I fell in love with her. She's 6 years old. She's played by, and I'm going to say her name right because I did look it up, Quvenzhané Wallace.
Good job, because I'm not touching that.
Thank you very much. I know that I said it right because I looked it up, like I said. She was 6 years old when this was filmed. She was 9 by the time it went to the Oscars. She is captivating in this movie. She is so strong and so spunky, and she looks at this place that she lives in, which is full of pain and grief and struggle and suffering, and to her, it's a magical kingdom. She talks to the birds. She says everything has a heartbeat. She draws her story on the inside of the boxes and says someday, you know, 100 years from now, these people are going to know that there was a little girl named Hush Puppy and she lived in the bathtub with her daddy. And I fell in love with her. I wanted to hug her for days and adopt her at the end of this movie. And she goes through a lot of stuff, which I won't spoil. But I just, in a place of such suffering, she just gave such hope and strength. And that's why this movie for years and years now has stuck with me. So that's my first choice. My second choice is the one that everybody's seen. I know I won't have to convince anybody to go watch, which is Inception.
So once we've made the plant, how do we get out? And I'm hoping you have something more elegant in mind than shooting me in the head.
A kick.
What's a kick?
This, Ariadne, would be a kick.
It's that feeling of falling you get that jolts you awake. It snaps you out of the dream.
Are we gonna feel a kick with this kind of sedation?
Oh, that's the clever part. I customize the sedative to leave inner ear function unimpaired. That way, however deep the sleeper still feels falling. Or tipping. Trick is to synchronize a kick that can penetrate all three levels.
We could use the musical countdown to synchronize the different kicks.
So this film, in case you have lived under a rock, stars Leonardo DiCaprio, Ellen Page, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. They're professional thieves that steal information by infiltrating the subconscious of their targets. And they're offered a chance to have, Leonardo DiCaprio is offered a chance to have his criminal history erased. if he implants some ideas into the target subconscious. The reason why I chose this movie, and I know a lot of people think that there are issues with the plot, and sure there are. It's kind of like Lost. If you're going to dig and dig and dig, sure you're going to find issues. But it was groundbreaking for its special effects, hands down, and I don't think that could be argued. I don't think I will hear any arguments to the contrary on that. The fight scene with Joseph Gordon-Levitt is remarkable. I don't think anything had been done like that before that happened. You see the effects of Inception in so many movies that came after it, the Marvel movies. Definitely Doctor Strange with the buildings that turn. It's had far-reaching influence on future movies. It was the ending. It was another one of those endings that pissed everybody off that people, I think, to this day still disagree about. And I won't talk about the ending. But it also taps into a primal fear I think we all have, because we live in a world now where everybody has all of our information. We willingly give over all of our data to a tiny little blinking machine called Alexa every day, or to this tiny thing in our phone called Siri. There's so many aspects of our life that people know about through social media. But the one thing we think is all safe is our innermost thoughts and our dreams. And this movie just totally turns that upside down, saying, nope, that is not safe at all. So Inception is my second pick. I'm going to go to Aaron first.
Oh, sweet. Well, I have seen Beasts of the Southern Wild, and I agree. She is great. Wallace is a very talented actress, and she's the youngest Best Actress nominee in history.
She sure was.
If I remember right. And
she was.
It's a film that I would agree she's a captivating performance. I don't love the... I mean, I like the movie a lot. I don't love it like you do. That's the magic of movies. Everybody's different. Inception to me is more of like, we're 12 Years a Slave, I think, is a very important movie. Inception is a very entertaining movie, and it's very smart. And there's a lot of ideas being used that really shouldn't make any sense, but good luck saying they don't make sense, because it's all about dreams. You can't really argue it. I mean, prove it. I don't know. How you can prove it? It's Christopher Nolan has a very talented knack for figuring out a hook for a storyline based on our subconscious fears. And that's what this movie is. And I'm very much like he did with Memento, where it's about memory and how we fear losing our memory. He did this with dreams now. And he made a heist movie. He made Ocean's 11 for dreams. And it's just fantastic. It's one of the most entertaining movies of the last 20. I wouldn't put it as my top 10 of the decade. And I don't think I did, but I understand why it should be there. In many people's lists. It's just it's a great film. So I would go with Inception.
Let's go to Amanda next.
Well, I'm going to take all of Johnny's input away, because I'm going with Inception. I can align right with Aaron, where I agree that there's a lot of magic and beauty in Beasts of the Southern Wild, and your sale was really great. I will tell you did a great job selling that movie. And I could hear the passion in your voice. So, I mean, you did a great job. It was nothing to do with you. The Inception is just something that is just remarkable to me. We talked about the visual effects and the way that the movie operated in terms of that. And we know Christopher Nolan is brilliant for everything that happened in that movie. But really just going into even the argument that has persisted for so long since that movie came out because of the ending, the conflict, where we don't have a full resolution as to what happened. And I love that so much that we don't need to know the answer, that a movie is still continuing time after time after time and will continue to do so for so long because of the stupid spinning top thing. And I love that. And I love that we have a way to modernize our fears into this current reality. And that's not something that's going to be changing in the future. This is a movie that's going to continue over further decades because technology is not going away. Like you alluded to, we give away all of our information. This is what this is we have no safe place. This is something that our dreams are supposed to be, where we can experience our lives and fulfill things that we never thought we could, or we get to live out our fears and all of these different things. And somebody could go in there and change everything about you because they can get into your mind. And I just feel like that's wild.
Would you say it's Beast of the Southern Wild?
Oh, that was mean.
That was mean. You're breaking my heart all over again. So, John, what say you?
I'm going to go with Beast of the Southern Wild because Courtney knows where I sleep and somebody's got to say nice things about it. I don't know what those nice things are going to be, but yeah, that.
Well, here, Courtney, you know what would have put it over the edge is if when they were in the bathtub, if there would have been a guy playing a guitar with flame shooting out of it.
The love.
Think of how amazing that movie would have been. Oh, my God.
There's some truth to that.
You know, they might have built that guitar with all the extra parts and everything laying around. It probably wouldn't have been an amazing guitar. But, you know, I'm not mad that you guys selected Inception. And the one thing I forgot to mention is this was one of my favorite movie-going experiences, period, when I was in the theater. Because I remember when it ended, everybody gasped. And I think I even heard some people go, what? Because everybody was just, you know, furious that they didn't understand. Or they, not that they didn't understand, but that it didn't give you a clear ending. So both were excellent choices.
And then everybody went home and YouTubed it so that way they could try to find that illegal clip and listen after the credits and see if there was anything there.
Yeah.
What?
The ending that launched 1,000 think pieces.
Yeah, and I think Chris Nolan actually answered that not too long ago. He actually gave an answer. Him or Jonathan Nolan, one of the two, actually answered that and then said, oops. But you'd have to Google it to find it. I don't remember what the answer was.
I don't think I want to Google
it. Nope, I don't want to know. Sometimes I like not knowing. All right, we're in the semifinals, and these go a lot faster. You don't have to give a whole monologue as to what your choices are. Just go ahead and pick your choices. Semifinal, we've got Hacksaw Ridge versus 12 Years a Slave. Courtney, you're a guest. Pick first.
I would for sure go with 12 Years a Slave for all the reasons that I said previously. That movie should be watched by everybody.
All right. Manda?
No, don't go to me.
Yeah, Amanda.
I saw her throw her head back and go, oh, no.
All ties are settled by our listener poll, too, if I didn't say that.
I hope I don't get slammed for this, but I'm going to go with Hacksaw Ridge because...
You're not going to get slammed for it. It's your choice, man.
I know, but I'm just saying because it's my own movie that I like put on the list.
It's your choice. You go crazy.
It has a level of rewatchability, and I'm going to take that into a factor because those are two really great movies, and it's hard to choose.
All right, John.
I'm going to go with Amanda on this. Same thing. It's got a level, Hacksaw Ridge has a level of rewatchability to it that 12 Years a Slave doesn't. And as much as I want to say that everyone needs to go see that, you can't go see it twice. So, yeah, Hacksaw Ridge.
Well, I've seen it three times, so I'm definitely going to go with 12 Years a Slave. And I will tell you, that means a tie. Courtney, we're aligned. Simpatico. Except you don't appreciate air guitar as much as I do. So here we go. Here we go. I'm going to the listener poll. It's between Hacksaw Ridge and 12 Years a Slave. And the winner, oh my God, by one vote.
No!
Hacksaw Ridge moves on.
Are you serious? One vote?
One vote. Yep. Hacksaw Ridge moves on. God.
Wow.
This thing is rigged.
Who did that? I'm going to find you.
This game is rigged. Why didn't I vote? I didn't vote. I didn't vote in the poll. All right, well, Hacksaw Ridge moves on. I hope you're all happy and can sleep well at night. Okay.
I'm going to sleep like a baby.
Oh, boy.
Because I picked the movie that I should have picked when I was told to pick.
Mad Max versus Inception. Mad Max versus Inception. John, I'll let you go first since one of these is yours.
Oh, as much as I really want to say one movie versus the other, I'm going to have to say Inception, because it's just a damn good movie. It's beautiful to look at. I do love it. And I get to say nice things about it now because someone's not going to murder me. So there.
All right. Murder.
Why are you insinuating that there's such violence in our house, dude?
Whose house?
Run's house. Courtney, what is your pick?
I know it was my original pick, but I'm standing by Inception for the influence on future movies, for the memorable scenes, and for that crazy ending, and for an amazing story. That I'm sticking with Inception.
All right, Amanda.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Mad Max is beautiful and everything, and Charlize Theron is great, but for all of the great visual effects that Mad Max has, Inception has that, plus a great story, and all of the other things that go into a best picture. So Inception takes it for me.
Okay, clean sweep. I'm going to go Inception as well because, you know, even though it doesn't have an air guitar, it has a top. And that's cool, too. So we'll go with that. Okay, so here it is, the final. So this is the one that decides. Remember, if there's a tie, it's settled by the listener poll. Whew. Which I already screwed up once. I'm just letting you know. So here are the two.
It's like the Iowa caucuses up in here again.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
Hacksaw Ridge versus Inception for best movie of the best picture nominee of the decade. Courtney, you're our guest. You can choose first.
So this isn't going to be a shock, not a surprise, not a ending being left unknown like Inception, but I'm definitely going with Inception for all the reasons I said before. I take a hack to Hacksaw Ridge, and I'm sticking with Inception.
Okay, John.
Inception.
Amanda.
Inception would have been my pick if Courtney didn't get it first, so Inception.
I'd pick Hacksaw Ridge.
Ooh, yeah,
wow.
Plot twist.
Yeah, I would have in a heartbeat.
Did you just pull a Christopher Nolan on us?
No, because...
Are you the top?
I picked a better movie. Hacksaw Ridge is all around a better movie to me than Inception. I enjoy it a lot more than Inception.
Ooh, explain.
It's military service. It's about a guy who doesn't want to fight but still wants to serve his country. That stuff rings very, very powerful to me. It's very true to me. I have a friend who died in service, and it was all about serving his country. So all these things are very important to me. Inception is a cool idea. It's a cool concept. I saw it twice. Or actually, I watched it once, and then I started to rewatch it, and I just didn't care the second time. So it's a movie I really enjoy, but I don't need to see it again. I've seen Hacksaw Ridge like 3 or 4 times, and I love that movie. I just think it's a fantastic movie. It's not 12 Years a Slave, but it's right under there. I mean, it was, like I said earlier, it was my top two that year that it came out. So I love that movie. I just like Inception, and I don't care if the top was up or not. I don't. All right. So the whole movie, all right, well, where are we at here? So the whole best picture winner, how do we say this? So the movie Battle Royale winner of the whole Oscar contest this year, the Oscar edition best picture nominees of the 2010s
edition.
There you go. I can't say that right, but the winner is Hacksaw Ridge. No, I'm just kidding. It's Inception. Yay.
I was going to say, check your maths, sir.
You guys got the semifinals wrong, and I hope you're happy with it because they would have changed how this whole thing went. I'm just letting you know. Hopefully.
That was a nail biter.
The listeners sided with us. You can't tell them that they're wrong.
Yes, the number one listener pick was also Inception.
Wow. So, the hoes have spoken. We got it right for once.
Well, it feels like we just spent a whole lot of time we could have just went by theirs and we'd been done like 40 minutes ago.
Oh my God, that would have been great. I could be sleeping by now.
But we said everything they're thinking and feeling.
But hang on, I do want to read their top five because this is kind of interesting because there's two of them that weren't on our list. So their number five was Parasite. I still think it's a little early for Parasite. I mean, I feel like you just need some room from that one, but whatever. Argo was number four. Number three, Hidden Figures, which is a great movie, and I'm glad people were talking about it.
Agree.
Number two, mm-hmm. Mad Max Fury Road. Number one, Inception. So I hate to tell you, Courtney, but a lot of people love that guitar.
But not more than the spinny top.
No, not more than the top. All right, so that's it. Whole movie of the whole battle. God, I already did it. It doesn't matter.
The whole movie Battle Royale Oscars 2010s edition.
Is what?
Inception.
Okay, why didn't I just have you do it at the beginning? I'm going to stop hosting this stupid thing. Courtney, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we're going to close up shop. Any recent film or TV recommendations we haven't already talked about?
I just recently wrapped up on October Faction on Netflix.
Oh, you watched that whole series, the first season?
Yeah, I mean, I was doing stuff while I was watching it, but yes, I watched the whole first season.
What a rousing endorsement that is.
Well, you know, I had a comic book cover that I needed to finish, so it's an interesting and weird show. It looks a lot like Supernatural, so it's kind of trying to fill that Supernatural hole that's going to be left here soon and fill it with a story that's kind of different at the same time. It's weird, it's magical, it's got some great moments in it, and some of the people who are playing these heroes are people who you normally wouldn't see in these sorts of roles, so I thought that was cool.
So in 1 week's time, I have watched 2 seasons of Killing Eve at the recommendation of the hose.
Yeah, good job, Amanda. And?
Good girl.
It is great.
We know.
Wow. I feel really ashamed because I remember being super pumped to watch it for Sandra Oh because of Grey's Anatomy. I remember sitting down, like, premiere, watching it, and not being interested, and I just kind of gave up on it. And all this time, I could have been embracing the greatness that is Sandra Oh and Jodie Comer in Killing Eve.
We're going to change that. It's Jodie Comer and Sandra Oh.
And then I also saw Miss Americana on Netflix, which is the Taylor Swift documentary. Even if you're not a fan of her, I think it really does a great job giving insight into the mental state, I guess, of celebrity and how the music industry and just fame in general can impact an individual, and just kind of reminding us that these people are humans as well. And it was really eye-opening, and it also gives you a little bit in the creative world of Taylor Swift, who has done things that most people have never accomplished, and she did so at like 17 years old. So,
I mean, I don't like her music that much, except for Shake It Off. That's kind of like crack. But, I mean, it's hard not to admire her, you know? I mean, she's accomplished a ton, and she's done it mostly on her own terms, so.
And it was really eye-opening because Kanye West, the whole moment where he took the mic from her when she got her award.
Did she talk about that?
She does, which she opens up a lot because she was very focused on just her music and not talking about politics, or she was always just trying to be like the nice girl, basically. And she finally talks about all of these things and how they significantly impacted her life. Like, there was a moment in the film, and it was related to the Kanye West thing, where I genuinely felt like there's a potential that this girl could have taken her life. She was 17 years old when that happened. You know what I mean? Like, that was gut-wrenching, and she didn't realize it at the time, but the entire crowd booing was for Kanye West, but she felt like it was for her. And it's just really sad and eye-opening, but it's also very inspiring as a woman and the way she changed her life at 30 years old, so...
Interesting.
I recommend it.
I'll have to check it out because I'm always looking for inspiration as a woman. I really want to, you know, get out there. What I would say is, like, I mean, isn't she the one that would write all those songs about her ex-boyfriends? So she's not totally mute or anything. I mean, she puts her feelings on her music quite a bit.
She puts her feelings in terms of relationships. She's actually been in a relationship for a while and refuses to, like, actually publicize it. So she's made a huge transition in her life and is just trying to, like, find... It's kind of about her journey finding herself.
But I'm saying she used to. She used to, like, put all of her stuff out there in her songs. Like her personal business.
Some of it. I mean, her relationships, yeah. But there's also... Right. They start to delve into some of the commentary, and she experienced, like, anorexia and different things like that. And so it was really jarring.
I will watch that. I am genuinely curious. I watched a little bit of the show The Stranger on Netflix. I've only watched like one episode, so I can't really say much about a guy who finds out a little secret about his wife and a stranger tells him, and then it's what he's going to do with it. I'm really excited to see where this goes. It's kind of unique. And Netflix is great at dropping shows no one's ever heard of and not marketing them, and then you just randomly come across them. So it's one of those. And I've been watching a lot of Hawaii Five-0 still. I have a problem.
Are you guys all keeping up with The Outsider?
Yep. I'm all caught up.
Nope.
So I'm an episode behind, but it's so good so far.
It's very good. Very good.
I haven't had time to catch up on it.
You haven't had time, John?
He's been drawing.
All right. But you've had time.
No, I literally haven't.
You literally just said you finished an entire series.
Right. But it's a series that I could actually do something while I was watching it. The Outsider is something that I have to, like, give 100% of my attention to.
Okay. All right. Feels like an excuse, but I'll buy it. Be sure to rate us on your app. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. I'm sorry I made the end of this episode very uncomfortable. Join our Facebook group or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Send emails to feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at rjohndraws. Amanda is at Sink Into This, and on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk, where we just had a murder mystery on that one.
It was so good.
Have you listened to it yet? Like the
me?
Yeah.
I mean, I was on it.
Okay, that's fair. Me at Aaron Smirks and on the Blacklist Exposed and presenting Hitchcock. Now it is time for the Ho Teachable Minute. This is where one of our hosts tells the audience one thing they learned from any movie or TV show recently in 1 minute or less, and it's a man's turn.
All right, so I kind of took this as like a takeaway. So it taught me something that I wanted to be, I'm glad I'm reminded of. So despite the cliche that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me, our words do matter. And I do believe that we have to actively work harder to try to be just a little bit kinder and less judgmental as people. And I took that away from Miss Americana watching the Taylor Swift documentary.
Do we have to, though?
I think we should.
All right. Fine. You look nice.
I don't want to.
Okay. Well, we could try maybe next week. I don't
Well, this is things you learned. It doesn't mean that John learned it. It just means that right. you learned it.
That's true.
I've learned a whole different stuff this last week. So, no.
Well, you don't get a minute this week. So, I guess you have to save it for next week.
Ha! We'll see if I actually watch anything for next week's Teachable Minute.
Remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn.
Do your job, John.
Watch stuff, man.
Oh my God, where's the time?
You literally watched 10 episodes of something.
Why don't you, while you're running, just get those little things that go over your face and you can just watch it while you're running?
What?
Because the last time I didn't pay attention to where I was going when I was running, I pulled an errand and almost broke my leg.
Let's go back to where she thinks you should put stuff over your eyes and then go running.
But this it's a little thing. It like hangs over and it holds your phone. I don't know how it connects to you,
right,
but they
have
it for like beds and
you're
stuff.
You're still running outside, like in traffic or
well,
near
run
traffic.
Run on a treadmill.
No.